This is Will Friedle, the voice of the future Dark Knight, Batman Beyond, and you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app. And remember a few things. First, Dana deserves better. And second, I am Batman.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
His name is Zeta. He's kind, gentle, and also a top secret military weapon. But he's made a decision.
I will not destroy anymore.
Now, with the whole world chasing him.
Please help.
He's on the run with his only friend.
I'm equipped with a built-in credit card. I can generate as much money as I need.
You are so taking me shopping.
The Zeta Project.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 245 of the DCAU Review. I'm Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, you can run on for a long time, but sooner or later, we're going to have to review more Zeta Project. And that's this week.
Yes, Liam. The Zeta Project reviews will continue until morale improves or something like that. But yes, we have yet again a double feature this week because we are just doing our darndest to motor through this content. We're providing content while also trying to respect the fact that we had a record low in listens for our previous Zeta Project double feature. So at this point, we just want to respect and try not to hurt anyone's feelings going forward here. So we're just trying to motor through this stuff. You know, we're just trying to get through it. So we have another double feature today. We have two episodes. That's another two off of the list. And we're just motoring towards the end of season one. It can't come soon enough.
That's right. So for today, we have the episodes Westbound and Hicksburg to talk about. And we'll of course, be breaking them down with our four main categories, as we always do. As mentioned on our last Zeta double feature, we won't be going quite so in depth on our plot recaps because, one, there's not much plot to recap in these. And two, there's only so much time that we want to devote to this, to the Zeta Project. So
we're being real here. We keep it real. You know, we're not trying to feign anything here. You know, for the couple people that do listen to these, that, and we know Maddie from Watchtower Database is likely listening. Maddie, we totally respect your thoughts and your nostalgic feelings and appreciation for this cartoon. We unfortunately do not have the same, but that's okay. Like we can disagree. It's okay. We can respect the fact that you also enjoy this. Like that's okay. Some people like peach pie. Some people like apple pie. Some people like coconut cream pie. Some people don't like pie. That's okay.
Yeah, no, and I will say I think we've inspired Maddie to start updating the DCAU wiki for Zeta episodes. So hopefully when we come back, we'll have a little bit more trivia and fun facts to share with you about the production of the series. Maybe that'll be interesting than the actual episodes are. But hey, we've got two to talk about here. We'll be kicking it off with our coverage of Westbound. And of course, that means I will have not one, but two IMDb synopses to read this week, starting with the one for Westbound. And this synopsis is brought to you by the Pod Tower YouTube channel, where you may in fact be listening to this very episode right you are listening and for some reason are not subscribed there, or even if you listen on an audio platform, it would still help us out if you went up to youtube.com/thepodtower and hit that little subscribe button, because it's helping us out, and it's also helping out our friends at Watchtower Database, who also post content there. So here it is, the official Last Bound, which was written by Stacy Liss Goodman, Robert Goodman, Wendell Morris, and Tom Shepard. That's right, four people were involved in this episode. It's a Mr. and Mrs. Goodman have a story by credit, while Mr. Morris and Shepard have a teleplay by, the script by. So that's how that breaks down. We have four people in the writing department. So the episode was directed by Bob Doucette, with music by Michael McQuestion and animation by Coco. And that synopsis reads as such: Z and Ro board a train to evade their pursuers. Agent West manages to board the train. West tries to identify the pair before the train reaches its destination, where more government agents await the train's arrival.
It's a fine synopsis, all things considered. I didn't have anything to pick apart necessarily with that one.
Mm-hmm. Wordy.
It is a little wordy. Yep, there's a little bit there. I feel like it's trying to fill in for the general lack of plot for the mm-hmm. episode. But yeah, you see, this whole episode, Liam, is a pun. It's called Westbound because it's taking place on a train headed westbound, but there also involves Agent West being stuck on this train, so West is bound to this westbound train, and that's our synopsis for this week. Our scores, get out of here. No, just kidding. It also revolves around the phrase "stop and smell the roses." We have Chekhov's rose smelling that happens here, and that turn of phrase. Of course, Zeta and Ro once again are on the run, and we have a very anticlimactic chase scene at the beginning where these agents are like basically just politely entering the room that they believe that the robot is holed up in. And of course, they just sort of gently walk in, and Zeta and Ro manage to escape. They chase them to a train station, the aforementioned westbound train. They jump on the train, and Agent West is the only one able to securely get on board before it pulls away. And he's able to contact Agent Bennett to let him know that he's in hot pursuit, and knows that both Zeta and Ro are on the train. Unfortunately, though, in the initial calamity of trying to get onto the train and the train moving, he loses his whatever you call that X-ray specs thing that he uses mm-hmm. to be able to see through Zeta's disguise. So he has to manually go around and poke people the entire episode. There's a lot of comedy in this episode.
I was going to say, this might be my favorite episode we've reviewed of the Zeta Project so far, mostly for this middle portion where it's just Agent West walking up to people, poking them, and saying, "Fine, I'm a federal agent," after everything.
We'll talk about it in voice performance, but Michael Rosenbaum, despite having some clunky dialogue at times, he's pretty hilarious throughout, unsurprisingly. But mm-hmm. So Agent West, it's basically just a Looney Tunes cartoon after that, with various door gaffes and, you know, Agent West getting threatened by the big hulking beefy man with whom is sitting with his girlfriend that Agent West goes up and pokes, and the beefy man isn't too happy, so he's going to wring his neck. And in the meantime, we also have this subplot of the fact that for some reason Zeta can't properly camouflage himself. Well, that we also learned at the beginning of the episode that mm-hmm. apparently Zeta can now camouflage anybody that is in contact with him. He has the ability to sort of project his holographic powers onto Ro if she is in close contact with him. So there's a point where they're escaping initially where he turns her into a beach ball, where he makes her appear as though she's a beach ball in this advertisement for this blimp that they are mm-hmm. that they're stationed on. And so As he says later on, his holomorphic processors are on the fritz, and this keeps causing Zeta at the most inopportune times to morph into somebody else, just when it appears that they're about to give Agent West the slip. Something happens and he turns into Agent West, or he turns into this waiter that's on the train at the same time. So you end up getting him sticking out like a sore thumb. But despite the fact that this train cannot possibly be that long, they just keep jumping to additional cars, and somehow Agent West keeps losing them. There's a scene where it was straight out of like a Three Stooges or a Looney Tunes cartoon, where he's like opening doors to try and find Zeta, and he opens one and Zeta has transformed into this old woman that's like in a towel and like screams, and Agent West quickly shuts the door. Which again, there's some chuckles to be had here, which is fine. But it all leads to the culmination of the episode, where Agent West is constantly radioing back to headquarters to let them know that he's hot on the trail, and they don't believe that he's has any shot of actually catching Zeta. And in fact, he tells them not to try and catch Zeta because there's no other agents there to support him, that he needs to wait until they get to the end of the line, I guess, so they can kind of reach him there. But he, again, goes against orders and continues pursuing him. This all comes to the culmination and the end of the train, as both Zeta and Ro reach the end of the train. Zeta comes to realize that the reason why his powers are on the fritz are because they keep passing these transformers. Get it? Transformers. That keep causing, it's, I told you, the whole episode revolves around puns. So as they pass under these transformers on the maglift train, it causes his holomorphic processors to shift, and therefore he's not able to sort of maintain his composure, and then it causes interference in the projection that he's giving off at that time. So this leads to a final showdown between Agent West, Ro, and Zeta. And just when he thinks he has them cornered, he is undone by the fact that Zeta morphs his head into a dog's head. This causes Agent West to fall backwards and knock himself unconscious. And that's sort of the culmination. Of course, there's one final trap here, though. The train is the final car has a hole in it and might cause the train to crash. So Zeta has to get the final train car disconnected and save the day, which of course takes up a whole bunch of time that he could be escaping, and leads to this run in at the end with the Agent Bennett and the rest of the NSA arriving, as just as Zeta has saved both Agent West and allowed Ro to save this dog that was in the final train car, that would also have been killed had Ro not stepped in to save the puppy at the end of the day. And there's a little scuffle on top of the train, and Zeta is able to escape, telling Ro to make sure that she meets him at the station. She doesn't know quite where they're going to meet, and then sees that there's a nice botanical garden, and she puts two and two together with the fact that Zeta was struggling with this turn of phrase of stopping and smelling the roses, and she walks in and sees a man rubbing the top of his head on the flowers, which Zeta mentioned earlier on in the episode that his olfactory sensors are on the top of his head, so he's smelling the roses, so to speak. And that's sort of how they wrap things up here with the episode and make their escape. And Agent West is once again left sort of holding the bag and stroking his chin as to just exactly how he was able to escape the danger at the crumbling car at the end of the train.
Mm-hmm. I'll say they're setting up, and I don't know if this has paid off because I've never seen this show before.
Mm-hmm.
But they're certainly setting up that agents Lee and West are sort of, they're starting to maybe, it's the chip, they're starting to chip away at the idea that Zeta's this unstoppable killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see how that works out as the series goes on here. But yeah, this is a fun little episode. I thought, like I said, it's very comedic. It's very, as we'll talk about, very much held up by the voice performances of our three leads in this episode. But you know, I had a pretty all right time with this one.
Yeah,
I think this is an interesting little premise. You know, to have our heroes trapped in an area they can't get out of with one of their enemies, and they're trying to hide and be inconspicuous. I think there's some fun to be had here.
Yeah, I don't know why Zeta didn't just jump off the train once he realized that he was on the train with a secret agent. He's a robot, and there was no explanation for why he. I mean, like, I get it, the train's moving at a high speed, but he's an indestructible synthoid robot. Couldn't he have just jumped off the train?
Well, could he jump the train and protect Ro from the fall as well?
Maybe not. I don't know. That's a good point.
That's my best defense of this, but yes.
Yeah, it's I mean, you can of course poke holes in plots all day long.
Oh yeah.
Compared to last week's episode, and maybe it's Stockholm syndrome, but the last double feature that we did 2 weeks ago. I felt like this was an improvement over that, somewhat. It's still a little goofy. There's still a lot of hijinks. There's a lot of, again, comedy, and there's no real, the action beat comes at the end with the tension of Zeta trying to remove this damaged train car from the rest of the train. And that's where the tension builds. And then of course, when the NSA shows up, you know, how's he going to escape the NSA? So, at no point does it really feel like this buffoon of an agent is really going to be able to do anything or, you know, overtake this robot. And the fact that he's undone by basically Zeta turning into McGruff the crime dog was like, what? Why was he so shocked or scared that he knows that he's a holographic robot? Why was he shocked that he changed to a dog head? Like, why did that cause him to, like, I don't know. That part I didn't understand. That part did, it's like, okay. Couldn't they have just like hit a bump and like like Agent West flies up into the air and knocks it, like gets knocked out? Like, that would have been 10 times better to me than he's shocked by the fact that the holographic android can turn into a man's body, an anthropomorphic dog.
Yeah, I mean, that is there. What really struck me watching this episode from the interactions with Est and Zeta when he has them dead to rights at the end, and then when the other agents are trying to capture Zeta, is it really, to me, was, and I believe we had talked about this in previous episodes, it's evident in some of the earlier Batman the Animated Series episodes, it seems very clear to me that there's a very strict no fisticuffs on this show at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they cannot even do like anything resembling that. So like when West, to the point that where West pulls a gun on them, Zeta can't like backhand the gun out of his hands. Yeah. or something. Like they could not do any sort of physical altercation, so they came up with this. I guess because it was such a light comedic episode, they thought having Agent West faint would be a funnier way to knock him out. But yeah, it is very silly. And then yes, they try to capture Zeta with a big net. So like I said, it just felt very we can't have even something resembling a physical fight in this episode was what came to mind for me. So yeah, for all those reasons, like I said, I liked this better than most of the episodes we've reviewed so far of the Zeta Project. So I settled on a 5 out of 10 for my plot score.
Yep, same exact score here, buddy. Not a completely boring, and there were no super annoying characters, so that's a plus in those compared to those prior episodes.
Plot automatically gets +1 if Bucky's not in the episode.
Precisely, exactly. Yep. So for that reason, also 5 out of 10. It is goofy. It is silly. There are at no point, like I said, does it feel like our main characters are in any sort of real danger, like they're actually going to get found out or, trapped by this, you know, bumbling idiot, that agent that is made out to be a bumbling idiot the entire time. That the no real danger, therefore didn't really feel like this episode was going anywhere, that the heroes had anything to worry about, which is kind of the central point of the plot, but it's better than the previous episodes probably that we've reviewed.
Fair enough. And that will move us on to visuals and animation for this week's episode. As mentioned, we have Bob Doucette as the director, the animation by Coco. Be any gunplay or fisticuffs, there isn't a ton to talk about. We get to see a lot of Zeta transforming. They are on, I think, the sequence when they're on top of the moving train and he's ducking underneath the tunnel and all that, and they're kind of doing some cool lighting changes and things like that. And then he grows the big claws to try to cut up the thing that holds train cars together, that insulates the space between the two train cars. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of fun there, but not a lot to sink my teeth into, other than maybe there's like a point, as you mentioned, where Zeta is smelling through his head, and then he doesn't have a real nose, he puts it toward his hologram nose and the rose kind of goes through his nose. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's kind of clever. That's a neat bit to pull off in 2D animation. I'm sure that wasn't easy, but I feel like by the fact that I'm talking about a rose going through Zeta's nose, that I just don't have a ton to say about the visuals in this episode.
Yeah. The only thing I liked, the visual gag at the beginning, which again really solidified what an idiot our Agent West is, where he steals the shampoo from the hotel. I did chuckle at that. That's like the first thing that you see, is they're trying to break into this hotel to catch Zeta and Ro, and they sneak past this cart from the cleaning lady, and he opens one of the drawers and takes out a bottle of shampoo to steal it for some reason. I thought it might come back into play later, like when he goes to reach for something, he pulls out the shampoo by accident, but it didn't really come back into play, unfortunately. So no payoff for the shampoo. That's a one strike against this episode. The blimp, I like that there was a blimp. I don't know that it matches the aesthetics for futuristic technology of having a blimp fly around this whatever city that they were in. We talked about that, I think, maybe on either the first or the second episode that we reviewed, where this does not feel like the same futuristic world that Batman Beyond is. Like, that is very sleek and square and streamlined. This feels just like, I don't know, I don't know how we described it, but it's just like slightly updated flying cars, like modeled, mm-hmm. like retro flying cars, essentially, is what we ended up getting here. Mm-hmm. And the buildings just kind of look like any other brick cartoon buildings, which I was thinking, like, you do have some of that in Gotham, but it's more of like the old torn, like run down areas, right, of Gotham that are those old brick buildings. Like, they're abandoned, like they're not the more streamlined skyscrapers and big metal buildings that sort of end up being most of what you see in Gotham. So I guess maybe this is a different city, maybe it's a smaller town, I don't know, but it just doesn't have the same look or feel. So because of that, it doesn't really feel like this is a futuristic world. It just kind of feels like it could be taking place not 50 years from now, but now, whatever now is, you know what I mean?
Right.
So the blimp was a neat gag. I get why they did it, but I don't know that fits the future aesthetic, that we have too many blimps in the future. But other than that, the McGruff, the crime dog, I thought that was whether that was on purpose or not, that was looked like a little homage to the mm-hmm. famous McGruff crime dog. And I think one of the biggest nitpicks that I had was in that final scene where Zeta's on top of the train and the NSA is caught up with him. So Agent Bennett is on top of the train. Agent Lee is on the opposite end. They kind of got him surrounded. They both have these like super cool looking rocket launcher missile things that we don't ever get to see used, unfortunately. And then the big NSA hover vehicle is flying behind them. So Zeta jumps off the top of the train to another roof of another train that's crossing by, which is a cool thing. And then Agent Bennett and Lee realize they're coming up on a tunnel that they have to duck down in order to not get decapitated. So they both duck down, and then they cut to like the train. As the train is going into the tunnel, you see the NSA hover vehicle realize that they're also about to crash into this. How they could have missed it. Like their whole thing is they're supposed to be flying this thing. Why do they suddenly surprise that they're about to come up on this giant tunnel? I don't know, but the animation of them trying to avoid, like they're able to kind of pull the nose up and avoid it. I don't know that the physics of that looked very smooth. It looked very janky. It looked very like it just jagged and things were moving very slowly. The physics of it did not match up to what they were trying to convey. It was not a very well animated scene, and didn't make it feel like they were sort of pulling up the vehicle to avoid it. It just kind of felt like it a Looney Tune where it was able to like stop in midair and then sort of angle up to mm-hmm. avoid this mountain. It was not animated very well, so that was a negative that I took on it. But overall, it's fine. I thought this episode did have more cell shading, which I appreciated. Characters looked less flat. I think the different disguises that Zeta got to use were pretty entertaining. And despite those critiques that I had of some of the animation, I thought that this was maybe one of the best looking episodes that we've done so far. So I ended up giving it a better than just okay 6 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just 1 point lower. I went 5 out of 10. Nothing particularly wrong with this episode to me. Like I said, it was just a lack of any kind of real physical interactions. The bit where, again, even though as we said, it's never really been talked about before, but that Zeta can now transform Ro if he's in physical contact with her. Like, so when he's like changing her hairstyles and stuff at the beginning, like that's fun. That's a fun visual gag again. And there's some fun to be had, like we said, in the bit with the dog when Ro jumps back onto the luggage cart to save the dog, and then the dog like scurries out of her arms and kicks off of her mm-hmm. so it can jump to safety and leave her to die. I think that's like a good bit of visual comedy. But overall nothing too great to write home about here, I think, for either of us, but nothing bad either, or nothing too bad anyway.
Yeah.
But moving on from there, we will have music to talk about, Cal, and we have the great Michael McQuestion to thank for the score for this week's episode. I got to be honest, like with a lot of Zeta episodes, I don't have a ton of notes in my music notes here. I did note there's the chase music when they're on the top of the train, I think, is fun. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of a nice little what's the crescendo? Music falls.
Descent? I don't know.
Perhaps. Anywho, that word, there's a nice one of those when Zeta jumps off of the one train to land on the other train. I thought that was a nice little bit of musical poetry there. But I do not have a ton to say. What stuck out for you for music this week?
Yeah, same. I think that there were a couple pieces that I did notate on. I thought that the music, as they sort of search to find out for, as the agents in that first scene are looking out the window, looking to try and find Zeta and Ro, there's sort of a little ditty that plays as they kind of allude that they're saying on the blimp so that the viewers know, but obviously the agents don't know. But the real music that I, musical notes that I wanted to mention were the tension building as Ro is trying to escape the damaged car at the end, as you mentioned, the scene with it where she's going back to get the dog, and Zeta's on the outside tearing off the car, unaware that she's jumping back in that car that he's tearing off. So there, it again, it crescendos to the point in that scene where you know, the it adds to the feeling of, oh no, is Ro going to make it? Is the dog going to make it? Is Zeta going to accidentally off Ro without knowing it? You know, and then right after that, when Zeta jumps on the roof and the door, the emergency door cuts open, there's this pretty big piece that plays when the government, the NSA, shows up. And then the subsequent sort of near capture that Zeta features, or that faces rather, in that scene, the musical accompaniment with that. Again, it wasn't anything that was hummable or, you know, that's notable or that I'll remember for beyond this review, but it was enough to notate that it stuck out, and I thought it was pretty solid. And that's more than I can say again about some of the other episodes that we have reviewed prior. So because of that, grading on a curve, I ended up giving Music a 6 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I just gave it the gentleman's 5 out of 10. As I said, I only really noticed it in the action scenes, and it was all right, but nothing really stood out to me. So it's nice that you were able to notate a few other moments where the score shined for Mr. McQuestion. And from there, Cal, we are at our last category for this first episode, that of course being voice acting. Not a big cast to talk about this week. We do briefly have Lauren Tom as Agent Lee and Kurtwood Smith once again as Agent Bennett. And then we have, of course, playing the dog is Frank Welker. Always got to mention him when he shows up. And then, of course, we have our leads for the episode, really, are who we want to talk about. Of course, we have Julie Nathanson as Ro, Diedrich Bader as Zeta, and of course, Michael Rosenbaum as Agent West. And as you mentioned, Cal, the most fun in this episode is or a lot of the fun and the comedy, even if the jokes aren't great, what tends to work is the Michael Rosenbaum's delivery of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very quirky and silly, and that kind of goes the same thing for some of Zeta and Rose banter throughout the episode. Sometimes it's not always the funniest joke you've ever heard, but it's just, you know, the way it's delivered can be very good. So a good job by our top three voice actors on this episode.
Yeah. I will say that the opening dialogue, I don't know what happened. I don't know if Mr. Rosenbaum was sick or didn't quite get the direction of what the scene was, but if you go back and listen to the dialogue between him and Kurtwood Smith as West is radioing in, man, that's hard to say, radioing in to let him know that he's on the train, the line is literally Kurtwood Smith, Agent Bennett, asks him, "Where are you?" And he says, "I'm on a train. Don't worry, I'll stop the train." Like, who talks like that? No one talks like that. Why is he talking like that?
Why are you saying the word train so much?
Right. Yeah.
Are you not on a train?
Right. You have to really hammer it home that he's on a train. Don't worry, he'll stop the train. It was very clunky. That's not obviously our actor's fault that they were provided that dialogue, but the delivery wasn't so solid. So I was like, ooh, this episode might not be a good showcase. But again, I think the rest of the episode more than makes up for it as Mr. Rosenbaum turns in a very subtly funny performance. As I said, I think the poking of the passengers is probably the funniest parts. Even as he's awakening from his fainting spell and dreaming about being named, you know, the top agent or vice president of the United States, I thought that was pretty amusing as well. But we don't get a lot of solid dialogue from anybody else, not a lot of emotion that's required from Ro in this episode, and we don't get a ton from Diedrich Bader either. So it's fine, it's okay, like we don't get a whole lot of range of having to share emotion, or, you know, Zeta's sort of just fixated on this idea of stopping and smelling the roses, and he does share a little bit of confusion with not understanding why he's unable to maintain the form of his disguise in those moments, but I didn't think this was the best showcase for Mr. Bader. It was fine. Everything was just okay. So I ended up with a 6 out of 10 for my score.
Yeah, I went one tick higher. I went 7 out of 10. I will mention, I almost forgot that because I think I had neglected to put him in my notes. Playing the voice of the boyfriend who stands up to Agent West and probably one or two other ancillary voices is Thomas F. Wilson. And that name might not sound that familiar to her, but he is, of course, Biff Tannen in Back to the Future. And more importantly to DCAU fans, he's Tony Zucco.
Ah, go figure.
And that one thug in Little Piece of Home, who's like a boxer for some reason. But yes, nice little cameo performance by him. Yeah, there's one bit where Agent West, as he said, they're doing like door humor, and he knocks on this guy's door, and he opens the door, and he's like, "I'm looking for a synthoid. He can turn into anybody." And the guy just asks him, "Well, how do you know I'm not him then? If he can turn into anyone?" And Agent West kind of pauses for a second, and then he pokes him and goes, "Nope." And then he leaves. I was like, just the very brief interaction between Agent West and this random train passenger, I thought was very funny as well. So yeah, some good quirky comedy, and certainly helped out by our voice actors in this episode. So
there you go.
That will bring us to our final scores for this first episode. Tallying everything up, I have a somewhat shockingly high 22 out of 40 as my final score.
And even more shocking, as we've notated, you tend to be the more generous one when it comes to giving scores these days. I have an even higher score of 23 out of 40.
Well, there you go. I gotta say, this is what I'm pretty happy to say. We can probably not have to say it has a thumbs up for rewatchability, even for Zeta.
It does not advance the plot, I don't think.
It's pretty self-contained. Yeah, it's pretty self-contained as far as the agents just chase them the whole episode and then they get away. There's no furthering of the plot to find Zeta's creator, or there's not really any character stuff with him or Rove furthering her backstory. So yeah, I think this one is pretty firmly in the skip pile, even though, as we said, it's kind of funny and quirky at times.
Yep, it's a one and done. If you're watching through these, if you're choosing to watch through this series, then certainly stay for the goofy, silly cartoon comedy, and then you can never watch it again.
Well, there you go. And from moving on from there, Cal, to our second episode of the day, we have Hicksburg. And of course, that means we have our second official IMDb synopsis of the day. Once again, brought to you by the Pod Tower YouTube channel, youtube.com/thePodTower. This episode, Hicksburg, was written by Paul Diamond, directed by Kurt Gaeta, with music by Michael McQuestion and animation by Coco. And that synopsis reads as such. Ro and Z stop by Hilberg to visit her first foster family, hoping to find a lead to Ro's family.
Family used twice. I'm on a train. I'm gonna stop the train. Ro's family to find Ro's family. Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the best. By the way, the first episode, Westbound, originally debuted here in the States on the Kids WB on March the 10th, 2001. For some reason, again, hard to tell the accuracy of these debut dates. I'm sure Maddie from Watchtower Database will correct us if these were not the original air dates. But again, we're pulling these off of the existing dates listed on the DCAU wiki. This episode was originally aired here in the States on March the 31st, 2001, meaning these episodes we're coming up on the 22-year anniversary of these episodes debuting here. And this episode kicks off. I actually thought this felt much more like Batman Beyond, like in the same universe as Batman Beyond at the beginning here with this opening scene. We have this guy that's battling this giant robot, and I was like, oh, where's this going? And the music's ringing through, and he's like beating this guy, and he says the word shway. Like, all right, we're okay, all right, I'm seeing some DNA matching here. It feels more like Beyond. And then we find out that this is in fact an advertisement for a movie being pitched to Zeta from an advert bot, I think.
Let me just say Adbot is my favorite Zeta character so far.
Oh, hands down.
This guy is incredible. This guy's on his grind set. He is after Zeta to see this movie. And then Ro walks by and he immediately goes, teenager, target demographic. And zips away after her. And I was horrified when Ro murders this bot right in front of her own android companion.
Yes. No. Not being able to read the room, Ro kills another robot in front of a robot man.
You know what I say, Cal? Hashtag justice for Adbot.
You do say that frequently. I can't get you to stop saying that, in fact. Oh, man. But yes, we learn that the reason why that they are at this shopping mall or shopping center is because Ro is there to buy presents and gifts using Zeta's unlimited credit card to buy gifts to impress her family. She's going to see her family, not her real family, but one of her adopted foster families in the state of Oregon, as we learned. And it's actually called the town of Hillsburg, but she calls it Hicksburg, based on the fact that she doesn't really get along with anybody there and has not too fond of memories of this family for some reason. She remarks that she was always looked at as the sort of the redheaded stepchild, essentially. She was never mm-hmm. good enough. She was always constantly compared to her foster sister, who was seemingly this goody two shoes, and she was never really accepted by her parents, her foster parents, so which ultimately led to her running away from home and at the age that she is now. So we get this set up for the episode that she's looking to sort of throw things in the face of this foster family, that she's well to do without them, and she has all these nice clothes and makes Zeta buy this nice car, and they're going to go to their family, this step or foster family, in order to attempt to get some documents so that Ro can begin the search to find her family, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I know that we sort of alluded to her having this family issue and the like. She's alluded to having a rough childhood, mm-hmm. running away, but I don't remember it being touched on before that this was like one of her goals, was finding her family. Did they actually mention that on one of the other episodes and I missed it?
Not really. I believe in the museum episode at the end, she's kind of like warming up to the idea, but it didn't seem like, oh, and you know, we're going to try to start finding her family too. I don't remember them explicitly stating that. So,
okay. I'm just making sure I didn't, it's very possible it could have been mentioned in more explicit detail, but I didn't remember them really hammering it home, which actually it kind of fits, because now you have both her and Zeta both attempting to find essentially their family, their true family. Mm-hmm. Zeta's trying to find his creator. She's trying to find her family. You have nice parallels that run there between these two characters. And then, you know, at some point their stories are going to cross and they're going to help each other in this quest to find their true family. So I do like that idea. It's definitely adds some dimension, I think, to the Ro character that may have been missing before, where she was sort of just the tag along, you know, snarky, quippy sidekick before. Now she at least has some character motivation and dimension to her, so kudos to them for giving her some further, you know, character development there, here 6 episodes into this show, or 7 episodes, whatever it is now. So she decides they're going to go visit her stepsister or her foster sister in an attempt to get some information from them, and they get up to the house. And she's made it very clear to Zeta that she's looking to impress them. So what better way than to impress her family than to be accompanied by none other than Adam Heat, the celebrity, the actor that was featured in this robot movie that was pitched to both Zeta and Ro in this opening scene. So Zeta has taken on the disguise of this Adam Heat, which, much to the surprise of both Zeta's foster sister and Tiffy, and and her boyfriend, Walt, and Ro herself, quite frankly. He's really taken to this persona of Adam Heat, and Ro kind of explains it away that they're there and he's filming something or doing research for some part, so they need to keep it quiet. But we learn very quickly that unfortunately Walt has already spread the word around town that this Adam Heat is in town, and there a crowd gathers outside the cabin where they're staying, and media shows up, and you know, word spreads quite fast, and wouldn't you know it, the NSA is always watching everything, and wouldn't you know, they stumble upon this information as well, and head out to Oregon. They decide that this must be the case because there can't be two Adam Heats. We learned that the Agent West was watching the equivalent of Access Hollywood and noted that there can't be two Adam Heats. Adam Heat was also in Florida at the same time. So this enhanced image uncovers that Ro is there with this other Adam Heat. So they determined they got to head out to Oregon. And we also learn at the same time that this crowd is gathered around here that Ro's stepfather or foster father, I keep saying step, it's foster. Foster father is also the sheriff of Hillsburg. Wouldn't you know? What a conundrum.
Can I just interject here?
Of course.
So as we come to find out, as you mentioned, the foster father is the sheriff. And Zeta is like such a... He's like public enemy number one, this show would have you believe, right? It's publicly known to the point where local law enforcements in these podunk towns have his picture on their wall. Sure. Like, because he could be anywhere. I get that. That makes sense. I'm sure every, you know, precinct, no matter how big or small, has some kind of like FBI's most wanted list somewhere that you could find. But if that's the case, if all of this is public knowledge, why is it not public knowledge that Ro is with him? Like, why is her face not plastered everywhere? Why is, like, she comes there and nobody's like, oh, you've been on TV because you've been, because you, even if they thought like she was kidnapped by him and she thought she was being held hostage against her will, like, wouldn't, like, it feels like people should be aware, or at least even if the public at large isn't aware of Zeta or this, like, law enforcement should know about her. So like the sheriff should have at least known. I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about watching this. It's like this whole thing of her, like, I understand this, that's not really about that. That's like a side story to the main thing of Ro kind of coming back to this old town and, you know, bad memories getting dredged up and old rivalries with her foster sister and not feeling wanted and all that. And wanting so desperately to connect to, you know, to a family and all of that. Like, I understand that's the main point here. But when, as soon as they showed that, like, the sheriff had Zeta on his little pin board, I was like, well, why would the NSA not also put out, at least to law enforcement, hey, he has a young blonde, you know, accomplice who follows him around everywhere. So look out for her too.
No, I agree. 100%. Makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense in this show.
I don't know. That one just stuck out to me as like a, like, even like, that's not like a, oh, it's just a kid's show, we can ignore it one. Like, that's a pretty big thing to just not have make any sense or to be explained away. Like, it's not like Bennett's never seen her. They've, like, they see her rescue him in the first episode.
Right.
Like they've chased.
That's how they pinpoint. That's how they pinpoint that Zeta is Zeta in this episode.
So why would the NSA not release that he has, even if they think she's acting under some sort of duress, why would they not say, you know, killer synthoid infiltration unit Z8 with blonde female accomplice?
Right.
I don't know. See, like I said, that one's too big for me to just go, well, it's just the Zeta Project. Like, no, I think that's bad storytelling. I think that's bad storytelling even for a children's cartoon.
I do not disagree with you. If you have a defense for that, anyone, Maddie, whoever wants to defend that, please offer it up to us. Tweet us at DCAU Review. Yeah, but as we continue along here, Ro enrolls her foster father into attempting to get this information regarding her actual family, her actual parents, and he remarks that he had always hoped that she would find her true family with them, but he's happy to try and help her out as long as Adam Heat is able to help out Tiffy in her attempt to become an actress by helping her put on a performance of Romeo and Juliet at the local theater, public mm-hmm. theater. It makes perfect sense. Of course, the boyfriend, Walt Merkin, who had to watch as Zeta makes out. I don't know how he kissed the girl when he's got a hologram for a face, but okay. Mm-hmm. He kisses her that doesn't have lips.
And we established the hologram is not, it's not a Leitner hologram mm-hmm. that has like physical substance to it.
Mm-hmm. It's an actual hologram. Fingers mm-hmm. go through it. Roses right. go through it. Yeah, despite the fact that he had to watch his girlfriend get kissed by the Adam Heat.
There is a weird cuck subplot in this episode. The cranky boyfriend. I guess it's I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say that. I think cuckolding is when you willingly want to see that happen to your girlfriend. Okay. So apologies for besmirching the name of cuckolds, but yeah, there's this weird thing where like the Tiffy is very taken with this big movie star and the boyfriend is just kind of teasing, which I guess kind of does have a payoff in that the boyfriend tries to kill Zeta with a laser chainsaw later.
Yes, true. Yeah, the whole payoff for the reveal that Zeta is not in fact Adam Heat is during this performance, the boyfriend's projector goes awry, which causes the scene to go awry, which causes him to kick the projector, which causes Zeta to be short circuit and him to be revealed as the robot. He attempts to escape. The sheriff chases after him. Walt, for some reason, jumps in the back of the sheriff's truck. I don't know why. The sheriff is sort of unaware. They go up this mountain. As you mentioned, he attempts to kill Zeta. This causes this giant avalanche of fallen trees or cut down trees to tree logs to come down the mountain hurling towards the theater. And Zeta has to sort of ski down this, which is kind of a cool visual we'll talk about in a minute, skiing mm-hmm. down this hill and sort of try to make the pile of logs avoid the theater, thus saving this crowd, the small but loud crowd of people that joined to watch this public performance of Romeo and Juliet. He is able to thankfully steer the pile of logs away and avoid it, which of course the sheriff sees. And is very, very happy to report that that Zeta did the right thing. He's clearly not the killer robot that he's been purported to be. And during this time, we also get some bonding moments between Ro and Tiffy, as Tiffy reveals that while she was a brat as a child, she very much cares about Ro now and has changed. Ro isn't so sure, but once Tiffy sticks up for Ro and tells everybody in the crowd to listen to her and not leave the theater in order to stay safe, Ro sort of buys that Tiffy has indeed changed. And so they have a little bonding moment at the end. And then we get the sheriff, Sheriff Wendell Morgan, apparently is his mm-hmm. name. Sheriff Morgan is approached, of course, by the NSA agents at the end that have discovered that Zeta is somewhere lurking around. And he points them in the wrong direction purposefully in order to allow both Zeta and Ro to escape. So we get one last little bit here as Tiffy is able to provide Ro with a picture of someone she purports to be as Ro's brother. So we get a little bit more of the piece of an additional piece of the puzzle about mm-hmm. Ro's mysterious family here, despite not being able to get a ton more information. She has something at least to continue her search with. So that's kind of where we end this week's episode on another cliffhanger as to what's coming next for our fugitives here. So This episode, I actually kind of, you know, as I'm grading on a curve again, I liked this episode more than I liked the previous episode. It's a little goofy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of, we'll talk about in voice performance. It's Dietrich Bader doing this guy that's an actor, but in a robotic way that is very entertaining. Mm-hmm. It's fun. We get some other good performances that we'll talk about from familiar voices. But overall, it's a fun little, it's a self-contained story. It's a fun little plot. I like the idea that Rose Foster family did actually care for her in some way.
Yes.
We do get a little bit where you can see like why Ro had some animosity towards them, because the sheriff mentions once he finds out that she's hanging out with Zeta and she's running around with this fugitive, he remarks that she always made bad decisions and she continues to make bad decisions. So you see mm-hmm. some of that vitriol that probably hurt Ro and that she held against him, but it's softened at the end by the fact that he does the right thing and points the NSA in the wrong direction to allow them to escape. So, Ro sees that and appreciates that and shows physical affection to him by giving him a hug. So
yeah, you get called some dad.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get a little bit of the repair there of that relationship, and despite her continued search, she does see value in the fact that not only does she have this relationship with this father figure, but she also has this now relationship with Tiffy, who she always saw as this rival, but now recognizes as a young adult has changed. And is certainly somebody that can be her ally or potentially a friend. So there's some good elements there. There's not a lot of action. Again, there's not fighting, there's no physical action that's happening here. The most excitement comes from Zeta running away from the sheriff and him then skiing down the mountain on this sled covered with logs. So, but there's still some funny moments here. So overall, 6 out of 10 for plot. I liked it better than the last episode. And that's it's probably the highest I've given a plot score thus far for a Zeta Project episode. So that's saying something.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I ruined this for myself.
What?
It really pissed me off that they just didn't try to even explain why nobody knows who Ro is or knows.
That's fair.
So I gave this a 4 out of 10.
That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's disagreement alarm. I don't disagree with you. The stuff I like is this one, as you said, it kind of makes Ro and Zeta two peas in a pod. They're both looking for their creators, for their family, and they're also establishing, like, what Zeta and Ro have found together, that, you know, not every, you know, familial bond is by blood, as mm-hmm. you know, she makes peace with her foster sister and father and leaves a better person than she was when she got there, and it kind of makes peace with this part of her past, which I think is nice. I like that stuff. I like, it feels very and I know this was an influence for the series. I know Bob Goodman has said that. That last act where the sheriff and the local town boyfriend who has been involuntarily cuckolded by Zeta are chasing him, that felt very Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk to me. That finale,
uh-huh.
where there's like a guy running with a chainsaw and then the transformation happens in front of everybody and oh my God, the town's freaking out. And then, but in the end, he does the right thing. And so the tough but fair sheriff lets him go on to the next town instead of turning him in. Like there's some.
Despite the boyfriend's attempts to turn Zeta in,
yes.
the sheriff has to talk over top of him and play a little misdirection there.
The little worm of a boyfriend. I'm glad his girlfriend cheated on him. So there's a little there's definitely a little Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, Incredible Hulk, I think in this episode as well. So there's fun to be had, but that I don't know. I don't think Ro could still be like an anonymous person at this point.
Really grind your gears. I get it.
Yeah. Well, that will move us on here to visuals and animation, Cal. As you said, we have quite a bit to talk about. We're in the snowy hills and woods of Oregon for this whole episode, basically. And as mentioned, there's kind of a final chase that happens kind of up in the mountains, and we have some wacky kind of costume and sets with the hologram projector that malfunctions, that ends up revealing Zeta. And then, as you mentioned, we have Zeta masquerading as this big movie star. I think there's some fun things to be had here when a Kurt Gaeta, a veteran of Superman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond and the new Batman adventures. So somebody definitely well versed in the superhero action and Coco once again on animation. What stood out for you this week in visuals?
I think the opening shot, it felt like I was watching a completely different show. You know, it felt, like I said, more like the DNA of Batman. It was a sort of a golem like creature, and to have the rug pulled out from under you right then, it's like, oh, this isn't the show, this is a movie advertisement within the show from the ad bot. Like, this is kind of disappointing. And then it's back to earth as you realize it's like, oh, we have a muscle car that sort of floats here. Oh, good. But I do think that there were some neat beats. I think, as I said, that Zeta sort of guiding this sled of tree trunks down the mountain was pretty entertaining. I will say, for whatever reason, I think this episode was a lot flatter than the last episode. We didn't get the same sort of cell shading and some of the other things that I liked from the prior episode. So it felt, in some of the character designs and the way that the things were storyboarded, felt a little bit more Disney-fied. I don't know how to say it other than that. It's just, it felt more like I was watching a Disney movie. With some of the expressions and the way the characters, especially Tiffy and the sheriff, the way they were sort of drawn and animated, it felt more like I was watching a Disney movie, which is fine, but this isn't Disney, clearly. You know, this is DCAU. So if I'm watching that and I'm drawn to like a different cartoon style, that probably isn't good for the show. Not that it's bad, it's just not good for the show. With that said, though, I think there were some interesting set pieces. As you said, having a different location was good. It disguises the fact that it's the future, and it actually could be the future based on the fact that we have the... I did kind of like the Hummer, the flying sheriff's Hummer or whatever it was. that was like, all right. It doesn't look anything like the cars we see in Beyond, but that's fine. It's a different artist. It's fine. It's a different interpretation. But yeah, I didn't have anything else that necessarily stuck out other than the sequence with the Romeo and Juliet hologram that kept malfunctioning. I did chuckle a little bit when it changed into a barn from the original castle sort of set.
Okay, I do like the visual gag where Tiffy hands Z his costume to change into, and then as soon as she walks away, he just throws the costume like into a corner and transforms. I think that's a funny little bit of visual comedy there.
Yeah, that's good. Other than that, I didn't think there was anything that necessarily stood out completely. So I think solely based on that opening little bit there, advertisement for the Adam Heat movie, I ended up giving it a 6 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went with the exact same score of 6 out of 10. I should also mention, per request of, I can only assume this is Maddie from the Watchtower database account, tweeted us to please make note of the director wearing a Malcolm X hat in Hitsburg, please and thanks. So there we are.
Okay.
Yes, the director who's directing this Romeo and Juliet performance is wearing a Malcolm X hat. So
very interesting.
There you go. I didn't have a ton to add. Yeah, that final sequence where Zeta's trying to stop the the log truck and is skating down the hill is very fun and very very well animated, I thought. So yeah, that, I think a little bit above average, even grading on the Zeta curve here. So good scores from both of us there. Moving right along to music. Once again, the music done for this episode by Michael McQuestion. And once again, I don't have a ton of notes other than, again, the action sequence music, the skiing down the hill at the end there, and when Walt is trying to kill Zeta, I think there's some fun music there, and I do like the very over the top kind of action movie music that we get in that the fake movie trailer at the beginning. Not a ton of notes otherwise for music for me for this episode.
Yeah, that and I think there was probably some mood setting music in the discussion between Ro and the sheriff when he was sort of bearing his heart and mentioning that he had hoped that she would kind of find a family there. And certainly at the end, when the reveal of the picture of Ro's brother, also there's some sort of tension building music there as well. But yeah, nothing that stuck out, nothing that I thought was remarkable. Perfectly fine, okay music. And that's why I settled on a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I went with the exact same score, 5 out of 10. Not a lot to write home about, but certainly some good job of enhancing the action sequences as they always do. And that will bring us to our final category, which is, of course, voice acting once again. And we have our regular villainous pair players in brief roles. We have Michael Rosenbaum as Agent West briefly, Lauren Tom as Agent Lee, and Kurtwood Smith as Agent Bennett. But the true star of the show, as mentioned, is Roger Rose as Adbot in this episode. Just fantastic. Also done a lot of other like random voices in DCAU cartoons. Plays the Jaguar Shaman and the Worry Men. plays the reporter guy that the Question attacks in Fearful Symmetry.
Nice.
Yeah, some other random appearances there. That's the highlight of this episode for me, truly. It's Adbot and the way it speaks about teenagers being in their target demographic just really cracked me up. But elsewhere we have Kyle Gibson as Walt Merkin. A fun fact about Kyle Gibson is he's on a show that I've never heard of, but that went for 23 episodes. And that show is called Nick Frano, Licensed Teacher. Yeah, so he's good at being like this spineless little twerp who's mad at, you know, his mad that his girlfriend keeps cheating on and swooning over another man in front of him. What a jerk.
Yep, he's the villain. It's just like every classic like rom-com where you're supposed to root for the girl to leave the guy simply because mm-hmm. he like doesn't want her hanging out with the hero of the movie.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
the idea.
And speaking of actors from shows I've only sort of heard of, we have playing the role of Tiffy, we have Kristen Hage. I might be butchering that last name, but she would probably best be known from the 80s sitcom Head of the Class, and also some sporadic work on TV. Actually had kind of a long layoff in the last 10 years or so. But I like her. I think she and Julie Nathanson, of course, as Ro, they get to play off each other a lot, again, because that's sort of the central, you know, Ro reliving this conflict that was never resolved from her childhood is I think they're both pretty good together in this episode.
Yeah, I think it works really well. They have some good chemistry. It felt natural by the end of it. You kind of believe that they grew up in the same household. I do like the fact that they're able to sort of have this heart to heart where she kind of really tries to appeal to Ro and say like, hey, like I know I was a jerk before, but that's not who I am anymore. And she's really able to kind of to emphasize that and prove it in the next scene, and they're able to share that moment at the end as she kind of reveals the the picture of Rose's long lost brother. So yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought they had some great chemistry together, and her chemistry with Dietrich Bader as well, playing Zeta slash Adam Heat slash Zeta as Adam Heat. Man, incredible.
I was gonna say, to your point, him doing, there's a point where they're asking him, oh, what's Los Angeles like, Adam? And so he's doing like this swagger, like cool guy actor, LA actor voice, but he's just robotically listing off like essentially like a Wikipedia article about the city of Los Angeles.
I giggled. It was good.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was good. That was really, really, really strong. And then him, of course, in the same robotic sort of LA, California actor voice doing his soliloquy from Romeo and Juliet later on in the park was really great too.
Absolutely. And then we'd be remiss not to mention DCAU legend playing Sheriff Morgan, Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
Making his really his only, believe it or not, his only like real, other than he plays one other. This is one of only like two other characters besides Lex that he's ever like actually credited in as playing.
Very interesting.
In DCAU, despite all of these shows. And of course The Flash in that one episode. But yeah, we have playing Mr. Morgan here. And as you mentioned, once again, playing off of Julie Nathanson, even though he's kind of just there to be the stern sheriff, and seemingly he's going to be like the main obstacle to them when he has his turn at the end of the episode, and he brings that tough but fair and hard-nosed local sheriff to it. But then at the end there, when he's got to show some warmth, unsurprisingly, Clancy Brown, good at acting. And was fun to hear his voice, fun to hear a familiar voice in this episode. So yeah, for all those reasons, I think voice acting is pretty darn strong in this episode. And I actually settled on a pretty darn strong 8 out of 10 for my voice acting score.
Yeah, I gave it the same exact score, 8 out of 10. It's a really good overall performance by all of our actors and actresses involved here. And you have two Goliaths here with both Dietrich Bader and then Clancy Brown, mm-hmm. kind of both interacting with each other and having their own places to kind of pull their own weight. So yeah, unsurprisingly, they're both really good and they do a really good job. And the supporting cast pulls their own weight too here in this week as well. So yeah, I definitely think it's not very surprising that based on who was involved in the cast that we gave it a pretty solid high score here. But I think the fact that the supporting cast was able to also stand out as being pretty strong as well lends to that score as well.
Absolutely, Cal. Well, it's once again time to tally up our final scores. And if I'm adding correctly, it looks like I have a final score of 23 out of 40 for this week's episode.
Yep, that makes sense. We agreed on every score except the plot, and I was 2 points higher. So that means I end up with a 25 out of 40. And I think as far as rewatchability is concerned, because we have the plot moving forward here with Ro developing her family and looking for the search for them, and that becoming a part of our storyline here that parallels Zeta's search for his creator, and of course the appearance of Adbot. This is a two thumb. this is as far as Zeta Project episodes are concerned, this is a must watch, because you gotta get those other details there about what's going on with Ro and why all of a sudden she's searching for her family and this mm-hmm. dynamic of hers. And I give it a solid.
Just remember hashtag justice for Adbot.
You're always saying that. We've created a movement.
I'm always saying that. But that will begin to wrap us up for these two episodes. Another two down, Cal.
Yep.
Of the Zeta Project. Thank you, everybody who does listen. The few, the proud, do listen to these Zeta Project reviews. We do appreciate it. If you'd like to support our show, as mentioned, you can subscribe to the Pod Tower YouTube channel and like the videos and share the links and all that. That helps us out. You can also follow us on social media at DCAU Review on Twitter and Instagram. Shut down the Hive page. It's not happening. if you're wondering why we haven't posted on that site, it's because I deleted it. It was a good try, but it didn't really work out. Anyway, we, of course, also, if you are listening to this through more traditional audio means, we appreciate you, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or what have you. If the app you're listening to us on happens to let you review podcasts, give it 5 stars and leave a review, we would appreciate that. That does help our show out. It gets us bumped up in the almighty ever-changing search algorithms that control whether or not new people get to hear our podcast or not. So we would appreciate you taking the time to do that. If you want to support us more directly, there are a couple of ways you can do that. You can head to dcaureview.com. We have a store up there. You can grab yourself a shirt or a mug or a hat or something. And of course, we also on our anchor page, our main site where our podcast is housed, anchor.fm/dcaureview. You can also, there's a donate button on that anchor site where you can donate to us directly. And as mentioned, Cal always puts up a special questionnaire, a special poll up on the Spotify version of the podcast that's exclusive to the Spotify version. So if you listen to it there, you can also interact with us that way in addition to our socials. But we do appreciate everybody who listens. And Cal, we are wrapping up the month of January here and looking on to a new month. And that means a new show to talk about.
That is right, Liam. And as we've stated before, we're headed back to exactly where we started. We've been covering it a lot recently because we have more episodes of it than we do anything else to cover, but also because it gains the most traction and tends to have a lot of listens. So we, of course, are headed back to Gotham City, Batman, the animated series. We are picking up right where we left off with our latest review, and that is going to be one of the most memorable episodes for many, many reasons. And that is going to be the episode Trial, which features, of course, Batman's entire rogues gallery, pretty much, and what happens when Batman himself is put on trial by his rogues. And there's a whole lot of fun that's going to be had. Huge voice cast, a lot of interesting dynamics. I have not seen this episode in quite some time, but can tell you the beat by beat just from the amount of times that I have seen it. So lots of good Kevin Conroy to discuss amongst a bunch of other voice actors and some interesting visuals as well. Can't wait to chat about you with that one. Trial coming up next week right here. Don't change that dial.
Absolutely, Cap. Cannot wait to talk about such a revered and classic episode of the series next week. And we'll be talking about Batman the Animated Series all month long in February. So looking forward to that. But until then, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back soon with another episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.